From movie set to multiplex, it's the business of film with James Cameron Wilson.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
And with those clips, which surely everybody will recognise, we begin the business of film. I am joined by James Cameron Wilson. James, hello as ever. So we're going to look back at what was hot and indeed what was not at last weekend's UK box office. So what was number one? I think we'd had Guardians of the Galaxy for 2 weeks before this week.
How prescient you should play that clip just now from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I'm sorry, Dave, because there is a lot of 2001 in our number one picture this week, Alien Covenant, which is 23% down on the debut of Prometheus 5 years ago. Although, to be fair, Prometheus enjoyed the biggest UK opening yet in the Alien franchise, with 5.1 million in the bank. Alien Covenant just missed being one of the top 10 biggest openers of the year so far, slipping in at 11th place. People just can't get enough of Alien. Are you a fan?
I was a fan of the first two, yes. Though, as you know, I'm not very keen on horror film, and Alien does seem to me to sort of bestride the line between sci-fi and horror. So I do get very frightened, more than I deserve to, as somebody who used to be a film critic. But I did like the first two. Haven't been keener on all the other ones since.
Well, although Ridley Scott's Prometheus, which is the sequel to his Alien of... Sorry, prequel to his Alien of 1979, it had the biggest box office opening of any film in the Alien franchise. A lot of hardcore fans were disappointed by it, me included. I think they found it perhaps a little pretentious because the film trying to find out where we came from. Yes. And the talk of the engineers, and we were in fact made by the aliens and so forth.
There were also, I seem to remember, James, as well. I mean, I don't remember it incredibly well. What is it, five years ago or something like that?
But 5 years.
I think we had a conversation afterwards saying what scientists would behave in that way. You know, they did silly things that took you out of the film. I remember feeling that anyway.
Well, I really didn't like the opening either of this extraordinary sort of wax-like He-Man who wanders around the Isle of Skye, or was it Iceland?
Oh, yes.
And he drinks this extraordinary thing, and then his DNA completely collapses, and he sort of plummets down this waterfall. And I thought, what is that all about? I just wanted to get back to the ship and to the alien. Of course, you don't get the alien in Prometheus. And I think that's why a lot of fans were disappointed.
Well, they've had to wait 5 years. Will they be disappointed by Alien Covenant?
Well, it took me a while to get into Prometheus. But once it got going, I was really hooked. And I saw it again this weekend. And once you get all the pretension out of the way, it really works. And of course, Ridley Scott's always had this amazing eye. And the new film, Alien Covenant, which is a sequel to Prometheus and a prequel to Alien, and it's the middle section of a proposed trilogy, it doesn't start very well either. And what bugs me is that considering that space is such a premium in space, I'm always surprised by how much space travellers seem to have to live in. And the opening is this massive room, completely white, with Guy Pearce, again, as Wayland, talking to David, who is the android. And there is a grand piano at one end. There is a...
I have never seen a grand piano on a spaceship before in a movie. I'm sure I haven't.
And on the other end, there is a copy of Michelangelo's David. And Guy Pearce asked David, played by Michael Fassbender again, what would he like to be called? And surprise, surprise, he says, he looks at the piano and he looks at David and he says, David. And I thought, God, that's a relief.
It could have been Steinway. Piano. Yes. Oh, my goodness. This is sounding almost as if it's one of those films that are too bad to be true. It might even be enjoyably bad. But I'm guessing it's, given the people who actually made it, it's not all as silly as that.
Well, no. Once we jump forward to 2104, we find a crew of 15, which is manning the colony ship Covenant, which is it Covenant or Covenant? Covenant.
Covenant. I think, yes.
Yeah, which is bound for a distant planet. On board, there are 2,000 colonists who, like the ship's crew, are tucked up in deep sleep. In charge is an advanced model of David called Walter. I don't know who he was named after. Anyway, he's played, obviously, again by Michael Fassbender. And following a random molecular circumstance, the Covenant takes an almighty battering, and the crew members are thrown from their pods, with the captain burnt alive in his own bed. The captain, who we never see other than a burning corpse, is actually played by James Franco. So I don't know if... I don't know what he's doing in it, really, because other than to play a burning corpse, it's really odd for such a great Oscar-nominated actor and poet. Anyway, this leaves Christopher Oldham...
Poet? Oh, we'll have to talk about that another time. I didn't realize he was a poet as well.
This leaves Christopher Oldham...
The captain lay in the burning bed. His heart was all aflutter, yes.
So this leaves Christopher Oram, played by Billy Crudup, the first mate, in charge. And it's his idea to stop off at a nearby planet from which the crew have intercepted a snatch of, and get this, John Denver's Take Me Home, Country Roads. This, of course, is too much of a temptation. So they... poor explorers, they find that this planet proved to be nothing like home at all. Much like the original Alien, its successors, and in fact the recent film which we reviewed here, Daniel Espinosa's sci-fi thriller Life, the formula remains the same. I think what fans really want is basically a whole lot of space travelers trapped in a series of corridors running screaming from this sort of slimy, shrieking thing. And they get more of that in the new one, Alien Covenant. And it does really feel completely different. This planet, and Ridley Scott shot it in New Zealand, and the interiors were shot in Australia. It really does feel like nothing you've ever seen before. And I think Ridley Scott always brings that to the film. And it is very tense. And once that ruddy alien runs amok, it is terrifying. And I have to say, one of the things I love about Ridley Scott's films is he always puts strong women in charge. Of course, we had Noomi Rapace in Prometheus, who undergoes the worst cesarean I've ever seen on film. And now we've got Catherine Waterstone, who really takes over, who is the daughter of Sam Waterstone from The Killing Field.
Oh,
and she
yes.
was also previously starred opposite Michael Fassbender in Steve Jobs, where she played the mother of his child, you may remember.
And just to remember, Ridley Scott, 79 years old.
I know. And, well...
to be making action movies, still pretty impressive.
And I'm really looking forward to his next film.
Which
the
is?
The Battle of Britain.
Is that actually the Battle of Britain?
The Battle of Britain, yes. Yeah, so
I'll be intrigued because there are now so few... I know they'll be using CGI, of course, which is a problem because, as we talk about often, it doesn't feel real because there are so few of the planes. The actual film we know of as the Battle of Britain, you know, it's always been said that, you know, 5-10 years afterwards, they wouldn't have been able to muster anything like as many.
No, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, what with Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk coming out in July and Ridley Scott's amazing visual eye, and with CGI now, it could be really exciting.
Well, I have to get on in just a moment. You just might be intrigued here. My daughter is currently down in Australia and is now going out with somebody who's something of a film fan, who is finally showing the film she refused to watch with me many years ago. I got a message the other day saying, had I ever seen a film called Blade Runner?
And I'm looking forward to the sequel of that.
I don't think he was a young man when he made Blade Runner, but that's back in 1982. Anyway, James, we must get on. So essentially, Alien Covenant, you think worth seeing? Borderline?
I think the underlying message about mankind's creation can be brushed aside for now. What audiences really want is what they get. And I think this Alien is a prequel worthy of the brand. And there is one extraordinary sequence. I mean, you remember, surely, the caesarean in Prometheus.
Yes.
There is a sequence in this film where David, the android, kisses Walter, the android, on the mouth. And it is so creepy. And how Michael Fassbender ended up kissing himself on the mouth is quite extraordinary. But that's what they can do with CGI now.
Well, let's see if I'm brave enough. I may need a few drinks to go and see that. I still recall when I was a national film critic sitting next to somebody you know, Karen Gazanovich, another critic. And in Alien 3, which is generally regarded as not being the best of the bunch, but there was a tense scene. Karen put her hand up my back and I screamed. At national film critic screenings, you are not supposed to express any emotion. You're certainly not supposed to scream like a little girl. You're listening to Share Radio. I am Simon Rose, and we're talking the business of film with James Cameron Wilson. So, James, you spent a long time talking about the new film Alien Covenant, so I guess we're going to have to move a little bit more sharply down the list. I'm assuming that Guardians of the Galaxy is still pulling in some audiences, even if he's knocked off the top place by Alien Covenant.
Walt Disney's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, after 3 weekends, this intergalactic comedy is now the second highest grossing film at the UK box office so far in 2017. And it's only been out three weekends. And it's the biggest box office success ever to feature a talking twig, with Beauty and the Beast boasting a phenomenal 71.6 million in its coffers. Disney is having one hell of a year. Mm. Anyway, we don't have a lot of time, so we'll go zip through the remaining films. Number three, we've got The Boss Baby, a very funny cartoon about a baby in a suit with a briefcase. Number four, Fast and Furious 8, which has been breaking box office records around the world. Number five, A Dog's Purpose, which is an incredibly sentimental, not entirely convincing film. I did blubber sort of inside anyway a couple of times, but it's plummeted 62% this weekend. I think people are finding out it's not that great. Number six, we have Der Rosenkavalier from the Met Opera, which is streamed live, of course, into cinemas throughout Britain. It's the 1911 comic opera, as you know, by Richard Strauss. Number seven, we've got Beauty and the Beast, the biggest hit of the year so far. What a huge figure that is, 71.6 million. Number eight, we have a new film, Simon. We have a film called Miss Sloan.
One I saw for possible award contention something like October last year. I think I did actually cast a vote or two for it in the nominations stage. But I'd be interested to hear what you say. It seemed to me not to figure very high up in any awards list. I'm not sure it did win anything, but I must say, I thought it was a very impressive movie. But we may disagree, as so often.
Yeah, well, we not so often, occasionally. In spite of the imminent opening, obviously, of Wonder Woman next month. I mean, great roles for women are so few and far between in the cinema. And Miss Sloan, for me, Simon, is one to celebrate. And let's not forget that Jessica Chastain, one of the finest actresses of her generation, did receive a Golden Globe nomination for this film.
Oh,
I was hoping
she
was going to get an Oscar nomination. And her recent roles have been tended to be in support of male stars such as Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar, Oscar Isaac in A Most Violent Year, Matt Damon in The Martian, and Chris Hemsworth in The Huntsman: Winter's War. However, she is Miss Sloan, and Miss Sloan is one extraordinary woman. It's a peach of a part, and she nails it. In Miss Sloan's book, knowledge is everything. She not only embraces homework like a religion, but she keeps key moves from the experts she hires to do her bidding.
So she's a particular political lobbyist. That's essentially the role, isn't it?
Yeah. Madeleine Elizabeth Sloan is a lobbyist, and she likes to win. I mean, such human necessities as sleep and food are irritants in her 24-hour plan. And so she gulps down psychostimulants to stay awake and eats alone at the same noodle bar every night. Then, in a very uncharacteristic move, she turns down a lucrative offer from the gun lobby in order to support an underfunded humanitarian rival. Do we have a clip?
We certainly do.
You're a piece of work, Elizabeth. If you want to set yourself on fire, the service you need to win, I won't protest.
The end is my concern. You liberal goody-goodies can fret over the means. You need me.
Were you ever normal as a child? over the twisted thought processes in your mind hardwired in the womb. Because I am having a really hard time understanding how somebody gets to this.
Guess I'm just a piece of work.
And that's Jessica Chastain with, of course, our own Mark Strong. I must say, watching the film, he seemed to be playing a very convincing American. Listening to him, not quite so sure, but I'm glad his career's doing so well. And also in the film, of course, we must mention, you mentioned Catherine Waterston before, but Sam Waterston, her father's in this.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it's a good top 10 for the Waterston family. And let's not forget Gugu Mbatha-Raw, another terrific English actress. Yeah,
Christine Baranski's in it, Alison Pill. I mean, this is John Lithgow appears. It's got a lot of movies I really, really, sort of a lot of actors I really like in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's both a courtroom thriller and a character study. And it's whip smart, it's a dialogue driven express ride of political and moral ambiguity. Chastain rises to the challenge and channels her own intelligence, passion, and vulnerability into this extraordinary performance. She is a sort of anti-heroine of sorts, but Jessica Chastain really makes you root for her in spite of all these negative,
which is just extraordinary, because you know, a little like that film Thank You for Smoking, though that went the black comedy route. This is directed by John Madden. He did what, stuff like Shakespeare in Love? And oddly enough, I did read
Jonathan Hotel.
Yeah, and Jonathan Pereira, who wrote it, apparently this is one of the very rare Hollywood films where only one writer ever worked on the script. Nobody else touched it, apparently.
Well, it's a jolly good script, and it's a really finely tooled. It's like an arrow. Yeah. This screenplay, it just zips along. I was so totally gripped.
I'm so glad. I would say, and I hope you would agree, Jones, that anybody who likes intelligent movies, who thinks there isn't really anything on, there's only, you know, the sort of blockbuster stuff, and there's a lot of that recently, and you've said a lot of it's very good, but at the same time, this is the sort of old-fashioned intelligence movie for people who actually want to think a little when they go to the movies.
Yeah, as Katharine Hepburn is no longer with us.
Oh, yes.
She could have played it, couldn't she, all those years ago.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Though if Spencer Tracy had been in it, she'd have suddenly gone soft right at the end.
Yeah. Well, yes. Anyway, we have very little time, and there is another film I would like to talk about. Number 9, we have Sleepless, which is a kinetic thriller with Jamie Foxx as a corrupt cop in Vegas whose son is kidnapped by drug dealers. And at number 10, we've got Their Finest, which everybody I know has absolutely loved. It's now clocked up £3.6 million. You loved it as well.
It's an
old-fashioned movie about the production of a propaganda film made in 1940 with a jolly good cast, Sam Claflin, Gemma Arterton, and Bill Nighy, among others. I didn't entirely believe in it, to be honest. And if I don't believe in it, I'm not engaged, and therefore I am not moved, I'm afraid. But
no, I understand that perfectly. Were that how I had felt, it would have been the same. If I can't engage with a film, then it's just it doesn't work at all. However, in this instance, I did like it. I'm on the other side to you, James, but it doesn't happen that often.
It does not. But I would beg you to see the film at number 15, which is called France.
Is that Ozon?
Yes.
Oh,
now, I've been a fan of François Ozon since his very first film, which was an outrageous sitcom called Sitcom back in 1998. For me, though, his work has been somewhat inconsistent, although recently he has been on terrific form with films like In the House.
Lovely.
Which I thought was terrific, was incredibly successful over here. His most successful film at the box office. Young and Beautiful with Charlotte Rampling and The New Girlfriend. But none of those films prepared me.
And Patisse, which I enjoyed immensely, which is very much another one I thought was just fantastic. But yeah, go on.
Yes, it's very stylized. We can talk about Patisse.
Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you, James. My apologies.
That's right. Nothing prepared me for the brilliance of his latest film, France, which ran off with 11 César nominations, the French equivalent of the Oscar. If ever a film I feel now was more pertinent to our times, it is France. It's set in Germany in the aftermath of the First World War, and it's a story of both acceptance and discrimination, inspired amazingly by Ernst Lubitsch's 1932 drama, Broken Lullaby.
Okay,
which I'd never seen.
I know Lubitsch, so I don't know Broken Lullaby, but okay.
No, I have to get it out and watch it after this. Anyway, it shows a country bruised, humiliated, and fiercely resentful of its neighbour, France. It's set in a sleepy medieval town and features the beautiful Anna, who visits the grave of her fiancé, Franz Hofmeister, who was a violinist killed in the Battle of Verdun. She is surprised then to find red roses placed there by an unknown hand. After making inquiries, she discovers that the floral donor is a Frenchman who is staying in town. Shortly afterwards, the very same gentleman pays a visit to Anna's house, where she lives with her fiancé's father, the town doctor. I won't tell you any more than that, but it is just so moving, so exquisitely made. And Paula Beer as Anna is just absolutely wonderful.
Well, I shall look forward to it. I just hope many listeners get a chance to see it. I suspect, and you know, especially if it's coming in at number 15, it's one of those movies that's not going to be on in every multiplex, sadly. But like you, I would suggest to people that although his work's occasionally inconsistent, that most François Ozon films are just glorious.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do we have time to talk about the Cannes Film Festival?
Let us talk about the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay, very briefly. It is now been launched. The jury is headed by Pedro Almodovar, with a very strong jury, including our Jessica Chastain. Mm. I hope she chooses some good films. Will Smith and my favorite Italian filmmaker, Paolo Sorrentino. Also, we have an English film in competition, which doesn't happen that often. It's Lynn Ramsey's You Were Never Really Here, starring Joaquin Phoenix.
It's going to be Lynn Ramsey or...
Andrea Arnold.
Yes, it's got to be. Yes, okay.
Yeah, our great female directors who make far too few films. Yeah. But yeah, Lynn Ramsey, I like her as a... I like them both as human beings as well. They're not just great filmmakers. I just wish they would make more films. In fact, Lynn Ramsey came up to my daughter and said, I want your number.
Oh, wow.
She was very cute. Yeah, I know. And Juliet should have really followed that up. But,
she hasn't?
No, she didn't. No. Oh. Anyway, that's another
story. She should do it now. But,
yeah. Well, anyway, You Were Never Really Here. In competition is, I should point out, is a co-production with France and the US. And I don't know if you've seen the TV show recently, Three Girls.
I haven't. I know of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's set in that same milieu, which could be quite disturbing.
Okay.
And anyway, more news next week about that. And if we've just got a second, I would like to pay my respects to Powers Booth, who died this week.
Oh, I hadn't realised.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think a lot of people will know him for playing Philip Marlowe on TV and Jim Jones in Guiana Tragedy, the story of Jim Jones. I remember him in a very underrated film, I think, The Emerald Forest, in which he wasn't playing a bad guy, and also Southern Comfort. And more recently, he was best known for Sin City and its sequel.
Mm. Oh, well, I'm very, very sad to hear that, James. We must talk about all this fuss about Netflix and whether Netflix is making movies or, as the French believe, because they don't appear in cinema, whether they're not. But sadly, that is all we have time for, a bumper edition of The Business of Film with James Cameron Wilson.
I see dead people.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I'll have what she's having.